This program has been described by AudioVision. For information on over 400 video and audio titles, call toll-free 1-866-966-7667 or visit our accessible website, www.audiovisioncanada.com. The contents of this program are protected by copyright and may not be duplicated or used for any commercial purpose without the express written consent of the copyright holders.
An M.J. Frankovich, William Seckley production with narrative description by AudioVision Canada. During the 14th century, Italy was overrun by mercenary armies, and local warfare was constantly being waged. This story tells how Giovanni Boccaccio, teller of bawdy tales, was convinced by the lady he loves that virtue triumphs over evil. The citizens of Florence are fleeing while the city is being besieged by a mercenary army. Only Boccaccio dares enter the city in search of the woman he loves. Boccaccio rides toward the walled city against a flood of escaping Florentines. Boccaccio enters the city through a massive stone arch. Joan Fontaine, Louis Jourdan. In Decameron Nights. With Godfrey Turrell, Joan Collins, Binny Barnes, Elliot Makem, Marjorie Rhodes, Noah Purcell, guest artists George and Bert Bernard. Screenplay by George Oppenheimer, based on a treatment by Giza Herzig. Director of Photography, Guy Green, BSc. Production designed by Thomas Morahan. Associate producer, Montague Marks. Music composed and directed by Anthony Hopkins. Editor, Russell Lloyd. Production manager, Fred C. Gunn. Assistant director, Basil Keyes. Hairstylist, Maud Onslow. Produced by M.J. Frankovich. Directed by Hugo Fregonese. Riding proudly, the handsome Boccaccio heads further into the deserted city. Later, Boccaccio's horse is tethered under a colonnade beside an empty, sun-bleached square. An officer wearing light armor enters the square astride a horse. A drummer and a column of foot soldiers follow behind him. Boccaccio steps out into the square and watches the soldiers curiously. The officer dismounts, tips up his visor, and peers at Boccaccio. Boccaccio pours a drink. As the officer steps toward Boccaccio, the soldiers disperse into the buildings that surround the square. The officer confronts Boccaccio.
The city has been taken by Duke Lorenzo. You wish to be enlisted in his army?
Oh, I'm not a mercenary. Besides, I'm from Florence, and your local skirmishes are none of my affair.
The city is under martial law. You'll find that your affair. Who are you?
My name is Boccaccio. I've just arrived here.
Then you will leave again. At once.
Well, that's quite impossible.
Very well. You're under arrest.
The foot soldiers are looting the surrounding buildings.
May I offer you some wine?
The officer slaps the cup away.
I might even have you hanged. What are you doing here?
If it concerns you, I came here to find a lady with whom I'm in love. And the pursuit of love, I assure you, has many advantages over the pursuit of war.
You're under arrest.
For one thing, it's more fun. And it makes much less noise.
The officer draws his sword.
The joke is over.
Boccaccio eyes the blade.
Yes. Yes, I think it is.
Boccaccio!
A wealthy woman in a sedan chair stops nearby.
Contessa!
Shoving the sword aside, Boccaccio hurries toward the Contessa with the officer on his heels.
Boccaccio! What in heaven's name are you doing here?
Well, I've just arrived from Florence.
Arrest this man!
Later, Contessa. I'm searching for Fiametta. Do you know where she is?
Yes, she fled from here about a week ago.
Is she safe?
Oh, she's safe from these ruffians. And safe from you.
Hey, soldier! Arrest this man!
Later. Tell me, is her husband with her?
In spirit only. He died some months ago. But don't raise any false hope. She's as faithful to him in death as she was in life.
Impossible.
But true. She's hiding in the country with six females. I'm on my way there now.
You're going to Fiametta?
I'm afraid I have no choice. I either stay here at the mercy of these bandits, or go to Fiametta's hen house and die of boredom.
I'd come with you.
Oh, no, no. Fiametta would never forgive me. But I will take a message.
Tell her that I love her. That for me there is only one woman in the whole world.
No woman would give that message to another. Goodbye, my friend.
Contessa, I beg you. Tell me where she is.
I'm too old to be tempted by mischief. Go back to Florence, Boccaccio. To Via Sole.
The sedan chair moves away, leaving Boccaccio and the irate officer behind.
For the last time, I order you to leave the city.
I will obey at once. You have convinced me.
Later, the Contessa talks with several beautiful young women.
And then I drove off, leaving him lovesick and longing for our Fiametta. If it had been I would have brought him here.
Yes, how could you be so cruel not to tell him where she was?
If you knew his reputation.
We do.
I have read his poems and his stories.
Well, you have no right to at your age.
Life is so boring here for everyone. And Fiametta always sighing and praying all day. But it's only right that she should mourn for her good and faithful husband. He was old and dull. My husband won't be like that, I promise you. He'll be a man.
Well, I hope he's man enough to beat you when you deserve it.
Oh, Contessa, if only you told Boccaccio.
Yes.
What do you take me for, an informer? After I had promised?
Will he die of grief?
I somehow doubt it. I really do think that Fiametta might have been here to greet me.
But she's at her prayer.
One of the young women sees a horseman approaching.
There's a man coming.
Oh, God, let him go.
Is he coming here?
Can you see his face?
Oh, yes.
Fiametta arrives, primly dressed in black and wearing a medallion around her neck. Flustered, she hurries toward the other women.
Boccaccio, that man above all others. I refuse to allow him inside my house.
Boccaccio canters toward the house.
Lock the door.
Some of the women hurry to obey, but two linger behind.
Filomena, Pomponea.
The two join the others.
Hurry.
Fiametta glares at the Contessa, then leaves. The women hasten through the large house.
Amelia, the one on the right. Nathalie, straight ahead.
Fasten them tightly.
Tulamina and Pampanea close a door. But Pampanea secretly unlocks it.
You know why I won't speak to him. He's a libertine and a villain. I even refuse to see him.
As Fiametta stands rooted to the spot, Boccaccio strides toward her, then bows.
Sanctuary, Fiametta.
How did you get here?
Love guided me to you.
There's no place for you here.
And none outside. I have a whole army on my heels, and the city is besieged.
We're nothing but women in this house.
Unfortunately.
Oh, please, Fiametta, let him stay.
Don't send him away.
Oh, please, Fiametta.
We haven't seen a man for so long.
And you need me here to protect you.
Yes, we do.
No, it wouldn't be proper for you to remain in this house. I'm too recently widowed.
That can be cured by becoming recently married.
I shall never marry again. I intend to remain faithful to my husband's memory.
She clasps her medallion, which bears the portrait of a stern old man.
No, it's out of the question.
Fiametta, please. Think of me.
Don't be so heartless.
He'd only cause trouble.
Will you please go?
No.
As you wish.
Boccaccio takes a few steps, then stops.
I shall start for Florence, but I doubt that I shall reach it. So, goodbye, Fiametta. Goodbye to you all.
Oh, Paul.
Wait! Think of all the stories he could tell us. Why, we might be here for weeks with nothing to do and no one to talk to but ourselves.
Yes.
No, let me go. Send me away. A man can only die but once.
One moment. Suppose I were to let you stay, just to entertain us.
I can think of no greater pleasure than to entertain you.
Make no mistake, just as a storyteller. And on one condition.
Name it.
That you promise, on your oath, that you will not attempt in any manner to make love to anyone in this house.
Oh.
Outrageous.
Those are harsh terms.
Those are the only terms by which you may stay until the city is free and the countryside is safe.
Well...
Please, Boccaccio, please stay.
Pampanea steps to his side.
Very well. I accept.
Pampanea, have a room prepared.
Pampanea smiles at Boccaccio.
Now, Pampanea.
Later at dinner, Boccaccio picks up an hourglass.
And now I shall keep the first part of my bargain and tell you a story.
Yes.
What shall it be? A love story?
Are there any others worth hearing? It's too late for stories now.
Oh, no!
But this can be told in the time it takes for the sand to run through this hourglass.
He inverts the hourglass.
Once upon a time, there lived in a seaside villa in Italy a very beautiful woman. She was like, very much like Fiametta.
Yes,
very, very much so. Her name was Bartolomeo, and she was married to Ricciardo, a man many years older than herself. In fact, this Ricciardo was so old that he did little else but sleep.
As Ricciardo snores with a hat over his face, the young and beautiful Bartolomea regards him fretfully. Softly, she approaches him, lifts up the hat, then replaces it. Turning away, she shakes her head sorrowfully. Frustrated, Bartolomea looks at her husband's prostrate form.
Ricciardo!
He sits up.
If you must sleep, then come to bed.
But I'm not tired.
Now come along, dear.
Oh, well, I suppose I may as well go to bed.
And I'll come and tuck you in.
Ricciardo flinches at this suggestion, then consults an astrological calendar.
No.
No.
No, decidedly no.
What silly astronomical excuse you're going to give me now?
My dear, no excuse is necessary. You've only to glance at this.
Oh, I'm sick and tired of glancing at that.
Did you observe nothing? Absolutely nothing?
Nothing.
But it's all perfectly clear. Venus is eclipsed by Taurus. No, I'm afraid the time is not favorable.
Venus was eclipsed by Taurus yesterday.
No, yesterday. Venus was in the fourth house and it would have been favorable. I'm sorry I made an error in my calculations.
And I remember the day before yesterday.
But the moon was in her first quarter then.
She walks away.
Very good for financial matters. I spent all Tuesday collecting taxes, and we had lobster for supper. Don't you remember?
Ricciardo.
Yes, my love.
Will you tell me something?
Anything, my love.
Will you kindly inform me whether that calendar shows any chance of our ever having a happy life in the immediate future?
Well, my love, I don't want to depress you, but Mars is very active for the rest of this month. And next month, Venus suffers an almost permanent eclipse. That, of course, is worse. Now, that will take us up to June.
And June is going to be bad, too.
I'm afraid so. Now, if I had a birthday in June, everything would be wonderful. But my birthday happens to be in January.
And so for happiness, I have to have a husband with a birthday in June.
Exactly. Of course, if only you're...
I don't want you anymore. Today was no good. Yesterday was no good. And I suppose tomorrow will be...
Tomorrow? It so happens that tomorrow is unbelievably favorable.
Bartolomea beams happily.
You amaze me.
Yes, yes, it's all here. The first day of Pisces. Highly favorable for fish.
Her smile vanishes.
Fish!
The next day, aboard a rowboat, Ricciardo catches a tiny fish and brandishes it triumphantly.
Oh, a beauty! A beauty!
Bartolomea!
Bartolomea, a countess, and other women are on another boat. The countess squints at Ricciardo through a spyglass.
Your husband caught a fish. But my husband is a fish.
A sailor on Ricciardo's boat peers through a spyglass and sees a schooner bearing down on them at high speed.
Pirates! Impossible! There are no pirates in these waters. At least then there's nothing about it in the calendar.
He sees a skull and crossbones flag.
Shouting. Hmm? Sounds like pirates. Pirates!
Bartolomea and the Countess turn and see the pirate vessel sailing toward them. As Bartolomea begins hauling in the anchor, the Countess trains a spyglass on the pirate ship's dashing young captain. Then passes the instrument to Bartolomea. When she sees the handsome officer, a sensual smile crosses her face. Then she focuses on Ricciardo, who's flapping his hands in a panic. She turns to consider the pirate captain again, then lets the anchor slip over the side. Later, aboard the ship, as the captured women are paraded before the captain, he grimaces in disgust.
Next.
Another woman is brought forward.
Out of the question.
He inspects the next captive.
This is ridiculous. No market value at all.
When the Countess is brought forward, she curtsies and smiles coyly.
Well.
He approaches her.
This looks a little more hopeful. A lady of quality.
I see you appreciate the finer point.
You are, I would say, a baroness.
Sir, you insult me.
A duchess, perhaps?
Now you flatter me.
A countess.
Smiling, she nods.
Then may I say that your husband, the Count, is a most fortunate man.
The Countess smiles smugly.
My husband, the Count, is dead.
Dead? Take her away.
But your honor.
The name is Paganino, and I have no honor.
But you can't discard me like this.
Why not?
Well, because I always dreamed of being captured.
You are quite free to continue your dreaming on the mainland, my lady. Take her away.
Oh, I want to stay here. Put me down.
As the Countess is hustled off, Bartolomea is pushed to the front, eyes flashing.
Now, this must be either a queen or a...
There can be no doubt about your station in life.
Paganino steps toward her and examines her left hand.
And married. And from the quality of the clothes, the husband is somewhat older than the wife.
What makes you say that?
Because what an older man is forced to do with clothes and jewels, a young man can do with love. And speaking of jewels, I would say that the husband is not only old, but rich.
My husband is Ricciardo de Luca, and he is very, very rich.
Excellent. Set sail on the yacht.
I wish to go to my yacht.
Madam, the cargo on my ship has no say as to where my ship shall or shall not sail.
Are you referring to me as cargo?
I am. Ma'am, take it to the hold.
Paganino looks over the side to where the women wait below in a rowboat.
Contessa, will you tell this lady's husband that should he wish to see her again, that he must come to Mallorca in 3 weeks' time, and he must bring 50,000 florins.
Oh!
Bon voyage.
Over the shore! In! Out!
The women pull away. At night, the pirates pass a flagon of wine from hand to hand and make merry. As Paganino watches his crew from the stern, Bartolomea comes on deck. The first mate speaks to Paganino.
You should rest for a while. No, I'll relax tomorrow when we reach Mallorca.
Ships, Bartolomea mixes happily with the drunken pirates. Paganino looks on, concerned.
Here, you have a drink.
Cheat him,
monkey.
Here, you.
The two pirates pull knives and face each other.
Maybe you'd better take over.
Paganino hurries toward the fight.
Pietro! Domenico!
The two men stop fighting and stare at Paganino. Then slink away.
I'm sorry. It was my fault, not theirs.
Get back to your cabin.
He throws her mug of wine overboard.
Get back to your cabin.
Bartolomea stands fast, so he slings her over his shoulder and carries her back to her cabin. Inside her cabin, they struggle. He takes her in his arms and kisses her hard. When she clings to him, he shoves her away.
We shall be in Mallorca tomorrow. And unless your husband loves his money better than he loves you, I shall be rid of you.
My husband will be waiting for you with a battalion of soldiers. They will hang you.
I don't think so. The governor of Mallorca is a very dear friend of mine.
You haven't overlooked anything, have you? And yet...
Yes.
I think you're afraid of me, Captain.
He eyes her angrily. The next day, at a restaurant in Mallorca...
My poor wife. What she must be suffering at the hands of that fiend. Such a child. So naive. So trusting. I haven't slept a wink in the last 3 weeks. Too worried. As for food, I can hardly touch a thing. These oysters are delicious.
A small boy approaches Ricciardo.
Go away, horrible child. Who is it? Away you give me indigestion. He says Paganino's ship is in the harbor.
Ricciardo shakes his head, but the boy pulls the waiter to a nearby window.
Yes, there it is.
Oyster in hand, Ricciardo walks to the window. Heavy money bags hang around his neck.
That's the one.
Yes, I can see it for myself.
He says you promised him a florin.
I did. A florin for a small boy is absurd. He is something much more valuable.
No.
He hands the boy the oyster.
Might have a pearl inside it.
Ricciardo walks away. Later, dressed in a flowing silk robe and a tall, fez-shaped hat adorned with a feather, the governor of Mallorca walks along a quay to Paganino's ship.
His Excellency, the governor.
As the governor boards his ship, Paganino steps toward him.
And how are you, my favorite pirate? I trust you've had a profitable voyage.
Would 50,000 gold florins be profit enough?
50,000?
That is, provided a certain gentleman called Ricciardo cares to redeem a certain piece of merchandise.
Ricciardo? Ricciardo? Oh, dear, how unfortunate.
Why?
This man came to see me yesterday. He wants me to hang you.
Bartolomea hears all this. Through a porthole, she sees her husband and the small boy approaching. Ricciardo boards the ship. But the governor's guards send the boy away.
Ah! Thank heaven you're here, governor. This is the ship, isn't it?
This is my ship, sir.
Allow me to present to you Captain Paganino.
Pirate!
It's a pleasure.
A pleasure, he calls it. A pleasure. Of all the gross insolence. To have one's wife stolen from under one's very nose, that's bad enough. But to have come all this way to retrieve her, and on an empty stomach, that's monstrous!
A husband who loves his wife, sir, should be willing to travel to the ends of the earth in order to retrieve her, and also to pay any price for her freedom.
I was prepared to pay 50,000 gold florins. But thank heavens that won't be necessary now.
No.
Of course not. Well, Governor, don't just stand there looking ridiculous. Arrest this man at once.
Arrest him?
Well, that's what governors are for, isn't it?
Not in Mallorca. And it's not quite as easy as that. Must have some proof of his crime.
Proof? I'll give you proof.
Where is my wife?
What makes you suppose I have your wife here?
Paganino, you told me.
I told you that a gentleman called Ricciardo was interested in some merchandise I had on board.
My wife is the only piece of merchandise I'm interested in.
Oh, and how much would you be willing to pay for her?
Ricciardo is taken aback.
Good gracious! I do declare you're in league with the monster.
Oh, how dare you make such a wicked suggestion? How much?
Well, at the most I'll pay her... Well, 100 florins would be fair.
100 florins for a wife? Is that all she's worth?
Ah! My poor, dear, tortured wife.
She approaches Paganino.
Bartolomea.
Paganino, my love, do we know this is, old gentleman?
Isn't this your wife?
Of course. My lamb. It is I, your husband.
How do you do?
I'm not very well. Is that all you have to say to me? After 3 weeks? After being kidnapped by this creature? After heaven alone knows what else?
What would you like me to say to you, sir? Darling, what ought I to say to the old gentleman?
I know what it is. He's threatened you. Yes, that's what he's done. Governor! He's threatened her.
No, I don't think it's that.
Bartolomea, will you please speak to me properly? Tell them who I am. Tell them everything.
What would you like me to tell them, sir? After all, I've never seen you in my life before.
But, my dear lady, are you absolutely certain this man is not your husband?
Quite sure, and I can prove it. If, old gentleman, I am as you say I am, your wife, then what color are my eyes in the dark?
Oh, that is a perfectly simple question to answer. Your eyes are... Well, there. Well, let me see. Well, oh, how should I know?
Oh, Your Excellency, do you honestly believe any man could be married to me and not know the color of my eyes in the dark?
No, I don't believe he could. Sir, you're an imposter.
I?
Oh, but if you're an imposter, that means that... Oh, dear.
Lies. All lies. The calendar said it would be a day of deceit. I am going to demand justice immediately.
The gentleman is right. Governor,
uh-huh.
You not be given the full justice for bearing false witness?
Yes, yes. Perhaps you're right. I shall show a little clemency. Possibly only a light sentence and, of course, a heavy fine.
How heavy?
Well, let me see. Libel, theft, forgery, perjury. I should think it's about 50,000 gold florins.
Later, as the pirate ship weighs anchor and her mainsails are unfurled, Bartolomeo and Paganino stand together on deck.
Tell me.
What is it?
Will you mind very much being married to a pirate?
Not at all, because I think I could persuade him to stop being a pirate.
Yes, I think you might. What is it?
I've just thought of something perfectly dreadful. Paganino, this is vitally important. Is your birthday in June?
And so Paganino and Bartolomea lived and loved happily ever after. Didn't make any difference to Bartolomea.
Was Paganino's birthday really in June?
There's no story if it wasn't, and no moral.
There is no moral to an immoral tale.
You found it immoral?
I found it indecent.
But Fiametta, my story is moral. Paganino gave up being a pirate. He was reformed by the love of a good woman.
You call her good after the shameful way she treated her husband who loved her so faithfully?
Is that your idea of love?
He was her husband.
In name only.
Well, I'm sorry if the story has displeased you. I shall try to do better the next time.
See that you do. It's time to go to bed.
Oh.
Next day, Fiametta and the other women sit in a garden that surrounds the house. Papinea and another girl are playing a game of badminton. As they play, Boccaccio paces alone near a low wall that overlooks the countryside. Noting that Fiametta is nowhere to be seen, Papinea hits the shuttle in Boccaccio's direction, then hurries after it. When she locates it, she hides it down the front of her dress, then pretends that she's still looking.
Papinera, have you lost something?
The shuttle. Will you help me find it?
Of course.
As they walk together, he looks for the shuttle, but she can't take her eyes off him.
You won't find the shuttle in my eyes, Papinera.
I don't want to find it.
Then your game is spoiled.
There are other games.
Which one must be of age to play?
If I were Fiametta, I would never treat you as she does.
Then I wish you were she. But unfortunately, you are not.
Fiametta approaches and sees him kiss Pampanea on the forehead.
Pampanea, I lost my shuttle. Boccaccio was helping me find it.
Fiametta sees the shuttle on the ground at Pampanea's feet.
I'm sure he would have found it in time.
Yes. No, I mean... Oh.
Pampanea runs away.
You promised me that if I allowed you to stay in my house, you would not make love to anyone.
But I thought that by anyone you meant... to you.
The others are waiting to hear today's story from you.
The others? Not you.
I shall be there.
I have told you 30 stories by now, and each one of them seems to displease you more.
Because the settings are different, the plots vary, but the characters are always the same. The young wife, the elderly husband, and the handsome lover. And virtue always ridiculed.
It's always a temptation to ridicule when virtue takes itself too seriously. Besides, could you do better than I?
Yes. Tonight I shall tell a story.
That evening, as the women stitch embroidery in a sitting room, Boccaccio joins them.
And so tonight, Fiametta is going to tell a story. A story with virtue triumph.
How dull.
Fiametta?
Once upon a time, there was a merchant, Giulio by name. He was like, very much like, he was boastful, arrogant.
Giulio carouses with a young woman as an older man watches disapprovingly.
Venable, you have no girl.
I have a wife.
That's nothing to boast about. So have I.
And where is this absent wife of yours?
Naturally, at our home in Genoa.
Alone?
Of course she's alone, except for our servant.
You seem very sure.
I am.
Why?
Because my wife is as faithful to me as I am to her.
Some men are born with wool over their eyes.
Infuriated, the old man gets to his feet.
Bernabeau! We were only joking. Sit down. Sit down.
Bernabeau resumes his seat.
And tell us about this wife of yours.
I will not discuss her with you, except to say that she is everything a good wife should be.
And what exactly should a good wife be?
A perfect housekeeper, an expert in needlework, a superb cook, tender.
She must be older than Methuselah.
She is very young and very beautiful.
And faithful to you?
I would wager my life on it.
Now, how much is your life worth? 5,000 florins?
What do you mean?
Would you be willing to wager 5,000 florins to my 1,000 on your wife's virtue?
Of course not.
Then you're not sure. You have doubts.
I am perfectly sure. But I will not wager.
That's very wise of you.
I will not listen to such talk.
Wait. Supposing someone could bring you proof of your wife's infidelity.
They never could, nor would I believe them.
Oh, but it would have to be excellent proof, undeniable proof, anything you demand.
And who do you think could ever bring me such a thing?
Well, there are men who are rather skillful in such matters. Me, for instance. I'll back my honesty with 1,000 florins. Will you back your wife with 5,000?
I have already told you.
Take his money, Bernabeau. Go on, you can't lose.
Of course, if you think that the odds are not fair to you. I will even have breakfast with her in her bed.
How ridiculous. On that, I would give 10 times these odds.
I only ask 5-1. Your hand on it.
Giulio extends his hand.
I accept, but only to cure you of your arrogant conceit and to silence your bragging for all time.
If I fail, my lips will be silenced forever. But if I succeed, they will be silenced temporarily by a kiss from your wife. Now,
as to terms, I shall meet you here again in 1 month's time. You shall be the judges to decide on the proof. Agree?
Yes, agree.
Giulio picks up his tunic and kisses his girl.
Now where are you going? I have a rendezvous.
Later, in Genoa, Ginevra, Bernabeau's wife, opens her bedroom shutters and sees Giulio lurking in the street below.
Larina.
Yes, mistress? That man is in the street again.
Huh? He is a persistent fellow, isn't he?
Aren't he?
And handsome, too.
Well, I didn't see what he looked like.
Oh, he's tall and dark.
I'm not interested in Larina.
Yes.
For 2 weeks now, he's been sending me flowers and poetry. And very bad poetry at that.
Yes, mistress, very bad. Men like him are a menace to women like us. Would you like me to drive him away?
Could you?
Oh, I've driven away many a man in my time.
Well, see what you can do with this one.
Yes, mistress.
As Ginevra leaves the room, Narina steps onto a balcony overlooking the street.
Hey, you down there! Why do you cast your evil shadow on our house?
Narina looks around to be sure no one is watching.
Tonight at 10. And don't forget.
When she rubs her fingers together, Giulio nods casually, then walks away. Later, as Narina climbs the staircase, she pauses and looks back.
Hurry, she's going to bed now.
Giulio follows her up the stairs. Narina and Giulio enter Ginevra's bedroom through a servant's door. When Narina extends her palm, Giulio gives her a small pouch of coins. She grabs it from him, stuffs it under her skirt, and leads him across the room to a huge, elaborately carved chest.
In here. And remember, you promise not to harm her or even touch her.
I'm an artist, and an artist creates beauty, not destroys it.
Be careful. My mistress has the loudest scream in all Genoa. Hurry.
He climbs into the chest.
Hurry.
Closing the lid, she steps toward the bed and turns it down as Ginevra enters.
Narina?
Yes, mistress?
I shall retire now.
I'm just arranging the bed.
I think I have everything for the night.
Yes.
Narina crosses the room to the main doorway.
Good night, mistress. I hope you sleep very, very soundly.
Narina leaves. Later, Ginevra sleeps peacefully in her bed. Giulio opens the chest lid and checks to be sure that Ginevra is asleep. Satisfied, he climbs out of the chest. He closes the lid, then approaches the bed, wincing at a crick in his neck. Giulio pulls out a pair of scissors and leans over to where Ginevra's long tresses lie on her pillow. When he touches her hair, she stirs in her sleep. On her left shoulder, he notices a small, heart-shaped birthmark. He cuts off a small lock of her hair. He puts the hair and scissors away, then scans the bedroom. He selects a medallion bearing Bernabeau's portrait from among Ginevra's jewelry. Inspecting it, he smiles sardonically. Ginevra stirs again, and Giulio crouches at the foot of the bed. When she doesn't awaken, he stands up, puts the medallion in a bag, and leaves the room. Later, Giulio confronts Bernabeau.
A lock of her hair and a portrait of her husband.
Thousands of women have hair like this.
Possibly, but only one man has a face like this.
But that could have been stolen.
On my word, it was given to me.
Your word is worthless.
He's right, Julio. That's no proof.
Tell us, did you have breakfast in her bedchamber?
I did, and what a breakfast. Benabo, I must admit, I admire your wife's taste in glass.
No, I will not listen to such talk.
Why? Are you afraid? Now, let me describe a bedchamber to you. The walls
have... That's enough.
Then you admit you lose, Benabo.
Never. A description of a room means nothing. One of my servants could have let him into the house while my wife was out.
That's quite true, Julio.
Then you force me to give you positive proof. Proof which no servant could have given me. Your wife, Ginevra, has a birthmark. A tiny mark in the shape of a heart.
When Brunabo winces, Julio gloats exultantly.
This birthmark is on her left foot.
Brunabo attacks Julio, but is restrained. Julio grins at the old man.
Is that sufficient proof, gentlemen?
Well, I think I speak for all of us when I declare Julio the winner of the wager.
Later, in Genoa, Ginevra embroiders in her bedroom.
Signora, signora! A message from your husband.
At last.
The men that brought it are waiting below.
Ginevra reads the message.
Ginevra, follow the men, and they will bring you to me.
What a strange message. I wonder what it means.
I don't know. I've had a strange sense of doom ever since the medallion was lost. However, whatever he orders, I must obey. That I shall prepare to leave immediately.
Yes, mistress.
Narina is uneasy. Later, Ginevra rides along a wilderness trail with two men.
Hello!
The thin man who leads the way rides a donkey, as does his shorter companion, while Ginevra rides a horse between them.
Oh! Hello! Hello!
The thin man rides on. Later, the three ride beside a mountain stream. The thin man stops, dismounts, and walks ahead a few paces. Hearing no response to his call, the thin man returns, then stoops to put a small cushion on the ground. He steps to Ginevra's horse, helps her dismount, then leads her to the cushion.
And now, signora, say your prayers.
But why should I say my prayers now?
So that you may die piously.
You want to kill me? But what have I done to you?
We're only following your husband's orders. There is nothing irregular.
My husband? I don't believe you.
Every wife we do away with mistrusts us. It's always the same.
But why should my husband wish me dead?
That's a question we never ask. Now, please, you must get on with your prayers.
Well, if my husband no longer loves me and wishes me dead, what have I got to pray for?
That's very logical of you, I'm sure. But you're making things very difficult.
It's getting late. My wife and children are waiting dinner for me. My friend here hasn't eaten all day.
Well, kind of get it over with as quickly as possible.
Oh, come now. I can't possibly kill you without a prayer. It wouldn't be decent.
I'm sorry. I can't oblige you.
Well, if you won't pray, maybe you'll plead with me. Or scream and cry.
Why do you want me to do all these things?
To make it easier for us.
When a woman starts yowling, we take an immediate dislike to her.
I'm sorry.
You're being very uncooperative. You might have some consideration for us.
We're not heartless men. We never kill anyone without a struggle. Do we?
I'm sorry. I simply can't struggle.
Oh.
Annoyed, the thin man pulls a knife from his companion's waistband. The companion gives him a larger knife. Grasping Ginevra's hair to pull her chin up, the thin man prepares to cut her throat. but retracts a knife.
I can't do it. And I was going to use the money to buy presents for my children.
Oh, dear. Well, if you won't do it, I will.
Hey, have you gone mad? Suicide? After your husband has entrusted you, do I care?
He needn't know.
Well, it's all very well for you.
We have a conscience. I wouldn't be able to look my children in the face again.
The short man signals his comrade.
Excuse me?
The thin man steps away, and the short man whispers to him.
My friend has had a wonderful idea. We could pretend to kill you.
Why should you spare me?
We can see no other solution.
Couldn't we smear some blood on your clothes and take them to your husband? What he doesn't know won't hurt him.
Why, of course. That's extremely kind of you two gentlemen. Here, give me the knife.
No tricks now.
I promise.
When she prepares to cut her hand, the thin man grabs her arm.
I wonder if you'd mind going into the bushes to do that. My friend cannot stand the sight of blood.
Ginevra smiles and nods agreeably. Later, Ginevra walks on a sandy beach beside the sea. Barefoot and wearing only a tattered slip, she sits down for a rest beside a large rock formation at the water's edge. Then she notices a pile of clothing nearby. She picks up the clothes, then peers around to see whom they might belong to. Seeing no one, she takes the clothes to the far side of the rocks, just as a youth climbs out of the water toward the spot where he left his clothes. The youth peeks at Ginevra as she takes off her slip. He ducks when she turns toward him. Ginevra begins putting on the youth's clothes. When the youth crawls around the rock formation for a better view, he steps on a twig and alarms Ginevra. She looks around, but doesn't see him. So she continues putting on his clothes. Ginevra pulls back her hair and conceals it under the hood of the tunic. Then she takes off her wedding ring and drops it on her slip. When she leaves, the youth comes out of hiding and picks up the ring and the shredded slip. Holding the tattered garment against his body, he watches her walk off. Later, a ship sails at sea.
Boy!
Boy!
The ship's captain takes inventory of his cargo.
Boy!
The boy is Ginevra in the youth's clothes.
Aye, aye, sir.
Climbing down from the rigging, she approaches the captain and the parrot.
Yes, sir.
Boy, tomorrow we land in Morocco.
Yes, sir.
I want you to come with me to the palace.
What palace?
The palace of the Sultan, and you can carry some of the merchandise I intend to sell him.
I'd like that.
Yes, you're a good boy and a good sailor.
At the Sultan's palace.
Your Majesty, his priceless silk from Cathay.
Very nice. Make him speak again.
He stares at the parrot.
Say something to the Sultan.
Only want a rum! Only want a rum!
And he, your Majesty, is...
I know. Spices from Tuscany. What's his name?
Polly, your Majesty. And he's a she.
Your Majesty, pearls from the Far East.
Yes, make her talk to me.
Well, I'm afraid she won't speak to anyone but me, your Majesty.
Nonsense, I'm the Sultan. Tell her I'm the Sultan, and she must speak to me.
I'm sorry, your Highness.
I must have the parrot.
If you will throw in the boy and the parrot, I will buy everything you have shown me.
But I cannot sell the lad, Your Majesty.
Why not? I'll make you rich. I'll make him rich. I give you wife.
Ginevra is alarmed.
10 wives? 20 wives?
I'm afraid that won't be necessary, Your Majesty.
Then you will stay.
Aye, aye, sir. Aye, aye, sir.
It seems as though my mind has been made up for me.
Later, Ginevra strolls to a market wearing the fine clothes of a courtier. She comes upon Giulio, hawking merchandise in the market.
Jewels from Italy. Rich jewels from the land of sunshine. Would the young gentleman like to buy something for his young lady?
This young gentleman has no lady.
A handsome lad like you, with no lady.
Ginevra picks up the medallion Giulio stole from her bedroom.
Where did you get this?
It was given to me by a lady from Genoa.
From Genoa? I know Genoa well. It once was my home.
Oh, you're obviously not Oriental.
No, but I'm in the service of the Sultan.
The Sultan? Would you care to examine some of my jewels?
You say this was given to you by a lady?
Just between us, out of affection and gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Good face.
Her husband. Poor fellow, he lost a wager to me of 5,000 florins and the love of his wife. It was rather foolish of him, particularly as he knew my reputation.
Very interesting. Tell me, is the wager worthwhile?
Financially, yes, but... You know women. The same old story. She grew dull.
Yes, I know. Tell me, what was her name?
Her name? Now, let me see her. Yes, of course. Margarita.
Ha ha, you have a wonderful memory.
One has to have a good memory in my business. Now, these wonderful sapphires.
Very beautiful. What became of the poor fellow?
Who? Oh, the husband. Oh, he became a pitiful creature. Oddly enough, I was the only one to help him. He works for me now.
Ginevra sees that Bernabeau is working nearby, moving heavy bolts of fabric.
Oh, I have to be going. How much do you want for this
medallion? Now, take my advice, lad, and choose something else. This will not appeal to any of you.
To me, I'll give you 50 florins.
50 florins?
60.
It's yours.
Ginevra takes the medallion and leaves before Bernabeau can see her. Later at the palace, several musicians play as the Sultan sits on his throne with Ginevra at his side. In a cavernous room lit with flickering braziers, a woman dances for the Sultan, moving slowly with fluid, sensual movements. Escorted by a servant, Giulio and Bernabeau approach the room.
I simply don't understand why the Sultan invited you here.
For that matter, why did he ask you?
I told you a dozen times. He always invites me when he needs any advice.
Oh,
especially about women.
The servant glares at them.
Follow me.
Eagerly awaiting their arrival, Ginevra whispers in the Sultan's ear. He nods, and Ginevra leaves the room. The servant arrives and bows deeply.
Your Majesty, the two Italian merchants.
Scarcely acknowledging the Sultan, Giulio sits down beside him with his eyes glued to the dancer, and Bernabeau joins them. The dancer continues her sultry gyrations. The Sultan sneaks an amused glance at his guests. Female servant approaches and gives the Sultan a knowing look as she offers him a tray of fruit. It's Ginevra. Giulio takes some fruit but doesn't recognize her. She extends the tray to Bernabeau, then whisks it away and leaves before he can help himself. Across the room, Ginevra switches trays, then returns with three small cups. Ginevra offers a cup to the Sultan, and when he accepts, she passes the tray to Giulio, who helps himself with a suggestive smile. Ginevra steps toward Bernabeau and bumps his head with the tray. When he takes the third cup, she walks away without looking at him. The Sultan summons a servant. The Sultan whispers into the man's ear. The servant beckons Giulio, who looks to the Sultan for confirmation, then gets to his feet and follows the man. The Sultan taps Bernabeau on the shoulder and leads him away in a different direction. Meanwhile, the servant leads Giulio to a deserted room, whispers to him, and leaves. Still in disguise, Ginevra sashays toward Giulio.
Oh. Are we to be alone?
Isn't that what you wanted?
Of course.
He reaches out.
Are you always so impatient?
I always examine jewels before I buy them.
She removes her veil.
The boy from Genoa. I thought there was something strange about you. What was the disguise for?
Oh, I was only playing a game.
Why?
Don't you know me?
Certainly, I know you.
Then you have seen me before.
Yes, at the marketplace this afternoon.
No, I mean as a girl.
Impossible. I couldn't forget you. I have such an excellent memory. Now, why did you hide such beautiful lips?
Have you ever seen these lips before?
No, but if you'd stand still for a moment, I might remember everything.
She allows him to kiss her, aware that Bernabeau and the Sultan are watching secretly.
Now do you remember me?
I've never been kissed by lips like those before.
Are you sure?
Too sure.
Would you swear to it?
On my life. Ginevra.
Bernabeau enters.
Are you really alive?
He steps toward her.
No, you don't.
She pushes him away.
Is that your wife?
Aha! So you never knew his wife before?
No. Yes.
Feed him to the crocodiles.
Wait, Your Majesty.
Oh, forgive me, Mr. Sutton. Please, forgive me.
Why do you ask forgiveness?
I caused her death. No, it was I who caused it. I had her killed.
There stands my real murderer. Tell Bernabeau the truth. The whole truth.
Very well. I'm a rogue, Bernabeau. I lied to you.
The crocodiles have not been fed since Tuesday.
Pity, Signor. Pity.
Aren't you going to plead for mercy?
No, Ginevra, I didn't. I wanted to die ever since I ordered your death.
And what about this one?
Spare him, Your Majesty, so that he may labor for my husband as my husband's slave for him, and repent the evil that he has done.
I will. I do.
Well, personally, I think you are being terribly occidental. I'd feed them both to the crocodiles. As for you, I'm sure I can find a vacancy among my wives.
Thank you, Your Majesty, but despite everything, I still love Bernabeau. And so Giulio did repent and paid his debt, and Ginevra and her Bernabeau sailed back to Genoa, where they lived happily together to the end of their days. And there's a moral to my story.
May we have it?
That the brightest jewel in a woman's crown of virtue is fidelity.
An excellent moral and a charming tale, except for the ending.
And how would you have ended it?
I would have had Ginevra choose differently. A man with Giulio's imagination and resourcefulness deserves the love of a good woman. Besides...
Stop. I will not have my moral perverted.
But you'd prefer to throw away a love and allow to bore?
He was her husband.
But to be faithful to a man who did not trust her, who almost caused her death.
I would have joined the Sultan's harem. He sounded most attractive.
Boccaccio eyes Fiametta.
No, I'm afraid your sense of fidelity is too inflexible for me.
So it would seem. I challenge you now. You tell us a story for once in which the wife is faithful and the lover not quite so, successful.
That will require very little imagination. However, if you wish...
The story of a faithful wife. There was once a young and lovely lady by the name of Isabella de Marco. Any similarity...
Fiametta looks at him coldly.
...is purely... Well, anyway, she lived in a villa near the city of Toledo in Spain. And she had never left there. Until one night... A remarkably handsome and aristocratic courier arrived at her door.
The door opens.
I come from the palace of the king. Take me to Dr. DeMarco.
This way, please.
The courier enters.
A gentleman from the royal palace.
The courier is startled to see a beautiful woman.
Yes?
I've come for Dr. DeMarco.
I am Dr. DeMarco. What may I do for you?
Nothing, I'm afraid.
You mean you come all the way from the palace for nothing?
No, His Majesty is very ill, with a mysterious malady that no physician has been able to cure. I was sent to bring Dr. DeMarco to his bedside.
And so you shall.
But you're a woman.
That's very discerning of you. What's your name?
Don Bertrando. No, I really think it's hardly
necessary. You think that women are incompetent and useless?
Or quite the contrary. Women very definitely have their uses.
In what way?
I would prefer to discuss that at a less urgent time.
That on the way to the palace.
The doctor, Isabella, rides through a forest with Bertrando.
I was always so busy fighting death, I never had time for life. Now that I think of it, you're the first healthy man I've ever met.
I shall try to remain that way.
It's quite a strange sensation being with a man who can take care of me instead of me taking care of him.
Oh, you look like a woman who can take care of herself.
Don't you like that in a woman?
Well, yes. Only, well, it's a new sensation for me, too.
You aren't married, are you?
Definitely no.
Don't you want to be?
Possibly, in 40 or 50 years.
Well, you'll be practically dead by then.
The perfect time for marriage.
No, I think you'd need a wife or a woman who...
Two horsemen emerge from the forest and bar their path.
And dismount.
You ride on business for the king.
You can proceed on your business as soon as you've turned over your money.
Bertrando draws his sword and rides forward. He engages one of the riders, and the two men slash at each other with glittering blades. When Bertrando drives off the first man, the second takes up the fight. As the second attacker turns tail, Bertrando loses his balance and tumbles to the ground. Isabella dismounts, rushes to Bertrando's side, and cradles his head in her lap. He sits up.
Lie still.
I'll do nothing of the sort.
But you may have fractured a bone or something. Take off your doublet.
Certainly not.
They both stand.
Well, you seem all right. Bertrando, you saved my life.
Ask of me what you wish.
Very well. I ask you to get back on your horse. And remember that it's the king who needs you, not I.
Her eyes follow him wistfully as he strides away. Later at the castle.
How can a woman cure the king? I agree with my colleague. How can she succeed where we fail?
I agree with my two colleagues. It is preposterous.
Mm-hmm.
One of the doctors crosses the room to where Isabella, Bertrando, and a priest are waiting.
I agree with all my colleagues. I am against it.
Father, I have faith in my ability to cure the king. Please take me to him.
His Majesty is sinking rapidly. Certainly there can be no harm in us seeing him. I am His Majesty's medical advisor, and I forbid it.
I am his spiritual advisor, and I advise it. The girl has faith. And faith has worked miracles far beyond science.
The age of miracles is over.
It will never be over. As long as faith exists, there will be miracles. Come, my child.
The priest leads Isabella and Bertrando to the king's bedchamber. Later, a soldier rushes toward a group of peasants.
God has saved the king!
God, that Isabella de Marco.
Peasants dance in celebration.
Oh,
rejoices at the news of the king's cure, tumbling, dancing, and performing acrobatics. Later, inside the royal castle,
you may rise, Isabella, and approach us.
Dressed in a delicate, shimmering gown, Isabella stands and steps toward the king past a long line of courtiers. The priest stands beside the throne. She stoops to kiss the king's hand.
It is I who should kiss your hand. I owe you my life. How can I ever repay you?
Your Majesty's recovery is payment enough, and yet I...
There is something you want. Name it, and it shall be yours.
Your Majesty, I should like to have a husband.
The courtiers smirk at her request.
A reasonable request? Who is the fortunate young man?
Don Bertrando.
Bertrando looks at her, bewildered.
Another conquest, Bertrando. It is not easy to keep up with you.
Still confused, Bertrando approaches the king, then looks at Isabella.
It is not easy to keep up with myself, sire. I'm as surprised as you are.
I'm afraid I do not understand.
Nor I, Your Majesty. I have met this young lady only once, when I brought her to your bedside.
You saved my life.
And in return, you take mine.
He turns to the priest.
Is this a wise choice, a man you hardly know?
Wisdom and love are not always compatible, Father.
What have you to say to this, Bertrando? I'm on the side of wisdom. Surely there is a happier reward His Majesty can give you. Money, position.
I ask only Don Bertrando.
I think I should warn you, Isabella. Bertrando has had the love of many women and been faithless to them all.
Take warning, Isabella.
She eyes Bertrando carefully.
I shall reform him.
You put me in something of a dilemma.
You put me in a reformatory.
If your Majesty wishes to withdraw your promise...
That I will not do. But perhaps I can dissuade you.
That you cannot do.
Bertrando, I have given my word, the royal word, to grant whatever request was made of me.
Your Majesty, I thought that the days of human sacrifice were over.
You could go far and fare worse. I will not force you, Bertrando, but I ask you as your king to uphold my promise.
Bertrando shoots Isabella an icy glance.
Then, as your subject, I must comply. You will not regret this.
I trust, sire, that you prove to be as good a prophet as you are a king. Now, by your leave, I will prepare myself for the sacrifice.
When Isabella smiles coyly at him, Bertrando stalks off. Later, at the wedding... Hordes of people crowd around the church, craning their necks for a look inside. The king emerges from the church, followed closely by Isabella and Bertrando.
I wish you great happiness, my man. Goodbye, Isabella.
As Isabella curtsies, the king leaves. Bertrando turns to Isabella.
I too wish you happiness in your marriage. Goodbye.
Grinning broadly, he walks away.
Goodbye.
I have proved my fidelity to His Majesty. This is all I agreed to do.
What about your fidelity to me? What about our marriage contract?
I give it to you.
He hands her a paper scroll.
You can hang it over our bed.
But, Bertrando, I love you. At least allow me to prove that love.
I'll take your word for it.
But am I never to see you again?
Oh, I'm sure our paths will cross sometime or other. It often happens with married people.
But is there no way to keep you with me?
He considers a ring on his baby finger.
Do you see this ring?
Mm-hmm.
When you wear this, and when you bear me a child, then and only then will I become your husband in every sense of the contract.
But how can I wear your ring if you don't give it to me? And how can I give you a child if you don't stay with me?
You look like a resourceful woman. And it will give you something to occupy your mind in the meantime.
He bows mockingly, then strides away. Isabella is crushed. Later. later, the priest arrives at Isabella's home. Inside, Isabella listens as a servant answers the door.
Father, there is no one at home.
I know better. I bring news of her husband.
Nevertheless, she's not at home to anyone.
Your mistress...
Isabella walks to a balcony and steps out.
Father, come in.
As the priest enters the house, Isabella hurries to greet him.
Father, tell me your news.
My daughter, you cannot shut yourself away from the world like this.
If you bring me good news of my husband, then I will let in the world.
Then I'm afraid my mission is in vain.
Why so?
I came to plead with you to forget Bertrand.
You, a servant of God, you ask me to give up my husband.
In the eyes of God, you have no husband.
But in my eyes, I have. You've heard of him. You know where he is. Tell me, Father.
Yesterday, I chanced upon a merchant who had recently come from Florence. It seems your husband is well known in that town.
What does he do there?
What he has always done. Waste his time and reputation and riotous living.
And there is a woman involved, no doubt.
Yes, an innocent young girl. The daughter of a poor woman who keeps an inn.
What is the name of this unfortunate mother?
Signora Buca.
Perhaps you're right, Father. Perhaps I shouldn't cut myself off from the world this way.
Later, outside the Taverna Buca, Isabella arrives in a sedan chair. Two attendants help her out of the chair. Beautifully dressed, she enters the taverna. A few men loiter inside.
Hey, fall alive!
Isabella watches a pretty girl hurry to a table and fill a mug from a jug of wine.
A girl?
Yes, signora.
What's your name?
Maria. Maria Buca. What can I do for you?
I should like a room.
I'll call my mother. Mama? Mama?
What is it?
The signora wishes a room. In my humble inn.
Would you rather I chose another one?
Oh, no, no, signora. Here you will have the best of everything. Beautiful food, a beautiful room. Oh, this way, signora.
The woman leads Isabella up a staircase to the second floor, as Maria looks on curiously. The two women enter a bedroom.
Enter, signora. This is my daughter's room. I wouldn't want to put your daughter out. She'll sleep with me. This is the finest room in the inn. And it's even more magnificent in the light.
Smiling, she opens a shuttered window. Her smile turns to an angry scowl when she sees her daughter run into Bertrando's arms below.
Maria! Go inside!
As Maria obeys, her mother glares at Bertrando.
You woman stealer! You snake in the grass! You betrayer of innocence! Keep away from my inn and from my daughter!
A thousand pardons, signora. I didn't know you were watching.
Scoundrel, scamp, scallywag, scum!
When Isabella hands her a jug, she throws it at him.
Get out of here!
Isabella smiles.
If your aim were only as good as your vocabulary.
He blows her a kiss and leaves without seeing Isabella.
Fiend in hell! Your pardon, signora.
One of your daughter's suitors?
A devil. That's what he is. A Spanish devil. He's trying to rob me of my daughter, my poor innocent child.
Perhaps he's in love with her.
What does he know of love? He's broken the hearts of half the girls in Florence, and now he's starting on the second half. Him already married.
Does he ever speak of his wife?
Not so you can hear him. She's some poor misguided fool whom he's left in Spain.
What makes you think she's a fool?
She married him, didn't she?
Isabella chuckles to herself.
I'll not have my daughter compromised by a married man. There's no future in it.
But suppose there were a future.
How could there be?
If I were to show you how to earn 1,000 golden florins.
1,000 florins? I'm a poor woman, signora. You mustn't tempt me.
Oh, I wouldn't dream of it.
Besides, even if I were a weak woman, which I am not, and willing to yield to temptation for my daughter's sake, how would I go about it?
You would send a message from your daughter to the Spaniard, arranging for a rendezvous at midnight tonight.
What? You asked me to sell my daughter for 1,000 florins? You think I hold her virtue so cheap?
Her virtue will be unimpaired. She will not even see him.
Not see him?
The room will be in complete darkness.
It gets worse and worse.
And she will not be in the room.
Where will she be?
Safely beside you in bed. In fact, she need know nothing of it. You can write the letter and give it to one of those go-betweens. One of those women who, for a small sum of money, arranges such matters.
Yes, I know the very one. An evil old witch. Utterly shameless.
I'm not concerned with her character.
Isabella dangles a money pouch under the woman's nose.
I cannot do it. It is not proper.
If I were to tell you it's not only proper, but right.
How can it be?
Because the gentleman in this room tonight will either be alone or with his wife.
At night, an old woman sneaks Bertrando upstairs to the second floor of the tavern. At the top of the stairs, she leads him toward Isabella's bedroom, but he restrains her.
You're sure this isn't a trap?
Do I look like the sort of person who would lead you into a trap?
Frankly, yes.
Then my looks are deceiving.
The old woman steps toward Isabella's room. The door opens, but the room is in total darkness. Bertrando pays the old woman and enters. Early the next morning, Isabella leaves her bedroom quietly before Bertrando can awaken and see her. She wears his ring upon her finger.
Maria.
Later, inside the bedroom, Bertrando finds an emerald earring among the bedclothes. Maria enters the room with a broom.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bertrando.
I was just coming to find you.
And instead, I find you here.
Where did you expect me to be? After all, it's barely daybreak.
And you said you loved me.
But I do love you. Haven't I proved it?
Mother told me what to expect of you.
Wasn't it rather indelicate of her?
How dare you speak of delicacy?
Oh, darling.
He steps toward her.
Now, what's the matter with you this morning?
Take your hands off me.
She raises the broom.
You are like all women. Unpredictable.
He hands her the earring.
By the way, this is yours.
Don't think you can bribe me. Oh, you fiend, you snake, you.
Now you're talking like your mother.
I could kill you.
She leaves the room, but he hurries after her.
Don't touch me.
Do you want your mother to hear?
I intend to tell her everything.
Oh, I wouldn't do that.
Why shouldn't I?
Well, it is not exactly the sort of thing one tells one's mother. She might not like it.
He grabs her.
Take your hands off me!
Not until you tell me what is wrong.
Quiet there!
Help! Help!
As guests come out of their rooms, Maria's mother arrives.
Save me!
What's the meaning of this?
Mother, you were right. Last night...
There is a misunderstanding.
He spent the night with...
I did not.
This is the end. Are you going to stand there and see an innocent girl attacked in her own house, in front of her own mother?
The man's a monster.
Throw him out!
Just a moment. I can explain.
Don't listen to his lies. Throw him out!
Several guests rush at Bertrando and carry him to the staircase. Bertrando is thrown down the staircase and falls head over heels to the bottom. When he comes to a stop, he gazes up at the angry mob in amazement.
Now go and tell the king about that.
Down in the
cabinet
where you belong.
Sit.
Forget
it. You
don't
want to be ashamed of yourself.
Months later, Isabella smiles as she rocks her newborn baby.
They're just like his father, always wanting something.
My daughter, I hope you will not suffer for what you've done.
Well, how can I suffer? I have his ring. I have his son. And soon I shall have him.
Bertrando is returning.
He should be here now.
I sent word to Florence telling him he should be a proud father.
What you have done is understandable, my child. You loved your husband and wanted him back. But that does not mitigate the sin you have committed.
Where is this woman who dares call herself? Where is she?
He doesn't sound very repentant.
Father, let me see him alone.
Where is your mistress?
Upstairs!
Hurry, Father.
God be with you, my child.
When the priest leaves, Isabella checks her hair in a mirror, then hurries to a seat beside the cradle just as Bertrando storms in. He looks at the infant, then glowers at Isabella.
So it is true. You have deceived me.
In what way?
Is that or is that not a child?
It is indeed a boy child.
The father. Tell me his name.
You should know his name better than anyone.
Don't put me off. Do you think I will allow my honor to be dragged in the mud? Whoever the father is, I'll kill him.
That would be suicide.
What? Are you trying to pretend that I father this whelp?
Don't shout so loudly. You disturb your son.
Answer my question.
There, darling. It's only your father.
As a doctor, your biology is rather faulty. How could I be his father when I was in Italy and you were...
I was in Italy, in Florence, at the inn of Mother Buca.
What?
She flaunts the ring on her hand.
Your ring.
Where did you get this?
It was a present from you.
You bought it from Maria. You have a child to try and entrap me. To make me believe you've lived up to the terms of our agreement.
The child is yours, Bertrando. Maria was not in that room in the inn.
What are you saying?
The truth. You spent the night with me, your wife.
Impossible.
Nothing is impossible to a woman in love.
What do you know about love, a woman like you? I tell you it was Maria.
I tell you it was Isabella.
No, nonsense. I know women. You're cold, efficient, clinical. A doctor dressed as a female. Now, could a doctor kiss me the way Maria did?
That all depends on the doctor.
She eyes him seductively, then turns her head and reveals the other emerald earring. He sweeps her into his arms and kisses her. When they part, he looks at her incredulously, and they kiss again.
My son! My wife!
And so Isabella performed the second miracle. For from that day on, Bertrando became a good father, a good husband, and a model of fidelity.
Charming.
Yes, it was so.
Fiametta suppresses a smile.
I adore happy endings.
Yes.
It wasn't a happy ending for Maria.
Nor for me, it seems. I failed to please you again.
I'm afraid my standard of morality is different from yours.
You wanted the story of a faithful wife. I gave it to you.
I would hardly call Don Bertrando worthy of such fidelity.
You don't want a story, you want a sermon.
Must a story be indecent to be entertaining?
Boccaccio is exasperated.
I've done my best to entertain you, and I failed. Perhaps it is better that I should leave.
No, Boccaccio, you can't leave now. Please, Fiametta, don't let him.
But there's no reason to leave. Where would you go with an army ravaging the countryside?
What reason have I to stay? Or even to live. Now that I know my greatest desire in life can never be satisfied.
Fiametta regards him nervously.
I've told you in so many words of my devotion for you, but you do not hear. So, goodbye, Fiametta.
When he walks away, her eyes widen with shock and dismay. Later, Fiametta sits alone in her bedroom.
Come in.
Boccaccio enters.
What are you doing here?
You told me to come in. I heard you.
But I thought you'd gone.
I've changed my mind. In the hope I can change yours.
Your promise?
I've decided to break it before I break my heart.
But have you no honor?
I've abandoned it for love.
I don't love you.
You will.
This is outrageous.
Of course.
They kiss and she melts in his arms.
Let me go.
She kisses him passionately.
And so, Fiametta and Boccaccio... Well, anyway, Boccaccio...
got your infant.
The end. This described version of the Cameron Knights was created by Audiovision Canada. The narrative description was written by Peter Agnes, narrated by Elva Mae Hoover, and produced by Marco Sorin and Valerie Hunter. Cast: Fiametta, Bartolomea, Ginevra, and Isabella were played by Joan Fontaine. Boccaccio, Paganino, Giulio, and Don Bertrando were played by Louis Jordan. Ricciardo and Bernabeau were played by Godfrey Turrell. Pampanea and Maria were played by Joan Collins. Contessa di Firenze, the Countess, Narina the Chambermaid, and the Old Witch were played by Binny Barnes. With Meinhard Maurer, Gordon Whiting, Carolus Villarius. For other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audiovision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755.